Ready to court, we'll call cause number 03170049-0-CV. Texas Industrial Energy Consumers, cities advocating reasonable deregulation and Office of Public Utility Council versus the Public Utility Commission of Texas and Southwestern Electric Power Company. For purposes of our recording, if you all would, please make your announcements and then we'll be ready to proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. Ben Hallmark for Texas Industrial Energy Consumers.
Morning, sir.
Good morning. Cassandra Flynn for the Office of Public Utility Council.
Morning.
Good morning. Brennan Foley for the cities advocating reasonable deregulation.
Kelly Billings-Ray on behalf of the Public Utility Commission.
And Marty McCormick here on behalf of SWEPCO.
Good morning. As I understand it, you all are going to have some sort of a time allocation. I assume that you've gotten with our clerk and let her know how we're going to handle the clock.
We have, Your Honor.
Would you let us know just so we can not be antsy?
Absolutely.
How are you going to split your time?
I'm going to go for 10 minutes. Then Ms. Quinn will talk 5 minutes, and then I'll have 5 minutes on the phone.
Okay. Very good. And you all?
And Your Honor, we're splitting it 10 minutes and 10 minutes.
Okay. Very good. Mr. Hallmark, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. The issues on appeal involve the approval of the Turk plant. To provide a regulatory backdrop on that, SWEPCO is a monopoly utility in its service area, so the PUC regulates its operations as a substitute for competition. The PUC regulates the addition of a power plant like the Turk plant through two types of proceedings. First, the utility must get authorization to build the plant through an application for an amendment to its Certificate of Convenience and Necessity, called a CCN, which is essentially the utility's operating permit. Second, if the utility gets that CCN amendment and it constructs the plant, the utility then comes back to the PUC in a rate case and seeks approval to charge customers for its capital investment in that plant. This is done by placing the cost of constructing the plant, including carrying costs called Allowance for Funds Used During Construction, or AFUDC, in the utility's invested capital, or what you may have also seen referred to in the briefs as rate base, the utility's rate base. The PUC will only grant authority to include those costs in rate base if the utility proves that it acted prudently in completing the project. So this case is an appeal of PUC Docket 40443, which was the proceeding in which SWEPCO sought approval to include the Turk plant in its rate base. The PUC found that SWEPCO acted prudently in completing that plant, which is a determination we challenge on appeal. And we're also appealing the PUC's decision that a cost cap that was imposed in the 2008 CCN order for the Turk plant excludes AFUDC costs, which, as I noted, are capitalized carrying costs. I'll turn to that cost cap issue first. This issue concerns the interpretation of the 2008 CCN order. The interpretation of a prior agency order is a question of law. Agency orders are interpreted under the same principles as for interpreting a statute. So if the order is unambiguous, we apply the plain language. We do not go to construction aids or extrinsic evidence. The 2014 PUC, however, departed from those standards by failing to apply the plain language of the 2008 order's cost cap. We've given you the language of the cost cap in the oral argument exhibit booklet that we've submitted. It's on page one of that booklet. This is from the ordering paragraph number two in the 2008 order. The underlined provision is the operative language. It says the cap on the capital costs that Texas retail consumers may be responsible for is the Texas jurisdictional allocation of $1.522 billion. So by its plain terms, the cap applies to capital cost. There's no limitation as to what type of capital cost it applies to. There are no types of capital costs that are excluded. So the question under the plain language of the order is straightforward. Is AFUDC a capital cost? If it is, the cost cap applies to it. If it isn't, the cost cap does not apply to it.
And I've seen it described as a carrying cost, and you've perhaps cleverly describe it as a capitalized carrying cost. So I guess we're going to hear from both sides as to which and what exactly it is.
Well, it's a carrying cost, and that's a good question, Your Honor, that is placed into rate base, which is the invested capital and thus capitalized, just like the construction cost of the plant itself. And in fact, the PUC's 2014 order explicitly acknowledges that AFUDC costs are a component of capital cost. That's in finding of fact 116E. So the PUC itself didn't deny that AFUDC costs are capital cost. but merely found that they were a separately calculated type of capital cost that was meant to be excluded from the cost cap. But the cost cap applies to capital cost period, and there's nothing in the 2008 CCN order that discusses AFUDC being a separately calculated type of capital cost that is outside the cap.
I noticed that a couple of the other cases, they had treated the AFUDC separately and actually said, how are they going to treat it? And for example, I think you guys cite an Arkansas case and another case where essentially they had, in addition to putting a cap on capital costs, they had mentioned what the AFUDC was and how it was going to be treated. How does that cut for your argument?
Well, the prior orders, what they show is that the PUC will sometimes reference AFUD specifically, for example, saying the cost of a project are $100 million, excluding AFUDC cost of $10 million. But that does not mean that AFUDC is not a capital cost. I think the most logical reading of those orders means it is a capital cost, just like if you were to say there are 10 pieces of fruit in the bowl, excluding apples. That doesn't mean apples are not a fruit. It means you're adding the explanatory parenthetical to explain that you're excluding the apples from your discussion of the fruit. So, in fact, in the 2014 case, the commission doesn't just interpret the prior order as excluding AFUDC costs from the cap. They also take an action based on that, which is they allow SWEPCO to capitalize their AFUDC costs by putting them into rate base. So that's consistent with treating these AFUDC costs as a capital cost.
It seems like we've got two standards kind of colliding here in some ways. You know, you got the standard of looking at the prior order as if it's a statute and looking at plain language. And you also have a lot of case law that says if there are two or more reasonable interpretations of a term, you go with what the agency interpretation is, unless, of course, it's unreasonable. Why is their view of what happened here unreasonable in terms of what capital costs mean?
Well, Your Honor, I think the answer to that question is because there truly isn't a dispute that capital costs are treated as that AFUDC costs are treated as capital costs. And in that finding of fact, 116E, I think that's a key finding of fact, where the PUC itself is saying that AFUDC costs are a kind of capital costs. But then they're just saying that it's excluded from the cost cap. And that's where we're going outside the order. There's nothing in the order to exclude any type of capital cost.
Go ahead.
And that's where the extrinsic evidence comes in that they say proves that this wasn't intended to be part of the cap. But so if you apply the plain language, you're left with this determination that the cap on capital cost, that's what it says. It applies to all capital cost.
So then it's not arbitrary and capricious to say that to categorize them as a capital cost, but it is arbitrary and capricious to include them now, considering the prior order.
What's arbitrary and capricious is to consider that AFUDC costs are not capital costs for purposes of the cap, even though the PUC found that they are a type of capital cost. And the cap is just the cap on capital costs. What the PUC did in 2014 is decide that the 2008 cost cap, which is on capital cost, does not apply to AFUDC, even though it is a capital cost. That's departing from the plain language of the order, and that is effectively amending the order some 5 years after it became final.
And I take it they can't amend the order because they would have had to go through a different procedure, or is there something that keeps PUC from being able to make an adjustment based upon what's happened historically?
Well, so a CCN order typically has res judicata effect in a future rate proceeding. That's sort of the whole purpose of a CCN proceeding. But it is probably possible that SWEPCO, theoretically at least, could file an application and say things have changed and we want you to formally amend this order. We want you to amend this CCN that you gave us for the Turk plant to remove the cost cap. But that's not what happened here. Here they were called on to interpret the prior order and they amended it improperly by departing from its plain language.
Hence the dissent.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly what the dissent found. Commissioner Anderson, by the way, was the only commissioner who participated in both the 2008 case and the 2014 case, and he said that there is no reasonable reading of the 2008 order that it excludes, that infers that AFUDC is intended to be excluded from the cost cap So that was his position on the case, and he did dissent. So I'd like to turn briefly to page two page two of the oral argument exhibits that I've handed out. And so these are just confirming that the order as a whole shows that the cost cap was intended to apply to all capital costs, including AFUDC. We see in the first bullet point that the commission's concern is with limiting cost of any additional costs that exceed that $1.522 billion. The second bullet point, I think, is key to understanding here, which is the commission saying, look, if the costs were projected to be any higher, we're probably just going to deny this application altogether. And the third bullet point I'd like to focus on, because I think it's an important one. Here, what the commission is doing is saying exactly what the cap does. And it says the cap limits the cost that may be included in rate base to Texas's jurisdictional allocation of SWEPCO's ownership share of total plant cost of $1.522 billion. So the commission is saying, what does this cap do? It limits the amount of cost you can put in rate base. And in 2014, the commission goes against this and puts more than the capped amount of cost into rate base by including those AFUDC costs. So I see my time is almost up, so I will turn it over to Ms. Quinn.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. Morning, Ms. Quinn.
Good morning. May it please the court, I will address the Turk prudence issue. In this case, the Public Utility Commission did not properly apply the legal standard for determining the prudence of the Turk plant. At issue is whether it was prudent for SWEPCO to continue constructing the plant despite changing economic and regulatory circumstances that began almost immediately after they received approval for the plant.
And before we jump into the kind of the background of what was going on at the time, what's the standard we're looking at when we're looking at a prudence decision, particularly an after-the-fact analysis of the prudence decision? You know, Gulf States puts this rigorous analysis requirement. Are we dealing with a substantial evidence review, or are we dealing with some other animal in this specific situation?
Here, there's no dispute about what the standard of for prudence is. It's set out in the Gulf States case, and there's two ways that you can show prudence, and one is with contemporaneous documentation, and the other that you're referencing is through an independent retrospective analysis. And under that standard, we're not looking at the company's actual decision-making process. We're looking at whether a hypothetical reasonable utility manager, having investigated all relevant factors and alternatives, would have found the decision a prudent course of action. So that's the standard itself. It can be both a legal issue and a fact issue. The way we've raised it is as a legal issue and whether the commission properly applied the legal standard. But the TIEC has also raised a substantial evidence argument that there wasn't substantial evidence to meet the standard as well.
So just kind of breaking that down, if you had testimony that a decision in retrospect fell somewhere along the continuum of a reasonable decision, I could see that as being a substantial evidence review. But is the legal issue you're raising that they didn't conduct an independent retrospective analysis at all, therefore that we couldn't have a rigorous review?
Yes, there's a few aspects to it. You have to show each of the pieces of the retrospective analysis. One, this isn't a case where the utility actually pled both options. They didn't say we have contemporaneous documentation, but alternatively we have an independent retrospective analysis. They just didn't have that. The first time the retrospective analysis came up was actually at the end of the proceeding in the PUC's order itself. But a couple other parts related to the legal standard, it does require knowing what the relevant alternatives were at the time. And the commission's order itself, if you look at the findings of fact, there's several that indicate that they did not. One, SWEPCO didn't itself consider the relevant factors, and because they relied on contemporaneous documentation, they also don't, there's no indication of other relevant alternatives that were available. One other issue with that is that SWEPCO relied on lay witness testimony rather than expert witness testimony. In the Gulf States case itself, the retrospective analysis was based on expert testimony, and because this is looking at what a hypothetical reasonable manager would be doing or would have considered prudent, that's really an analysis that requires expert testimony. Does that answer your question?
It does. And so your position is, unless there's expert testimony, it can't be independent, an independent retrospective analysis.
We're saying that because it requires looking at a hypothetical, it's under the rules of evidence, a lay witness's testimony is, or their opinions are limited to opinions that are rationally based on their perception. And so a lay witness can testify to, here's what the company's actual decision-making process is, but to make the leap to, here's the standard for a reasonable utility manager and what they would have found prudent given the options is beyond the scope of lay witness testimony. I see I'm low on time. I would just point out that there are several findings of fact that specifically indicate that the commission didn't consider all relevant factors and alternatives. We have those in our briefing, so I won't repeat them. But they do show that they didn't apply the standard properly, and we would ask that you reverse and remand.
Thank you. Ms. Quinn, just for the record, you state which party you represent and which party Mr. Hallmark.
Yes, I represent the Office of Public Utility Counsel, and Mr. Hallmark represents Texas Industrial Energy Consumers.
Thank you. Morning, Ms. Billings-Ray.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm here on behalf of the Public Utility Commission of Texas. So just to quickly reset the court here, as Mr. Hallmark mentioned, SWEPCO filed an application to amend its CCN to include ownership of this Turk plant. And the commission had concerns in that CCN proceeding about delays that were occurring in construction and permitting of that Turk plant. And so in that final 2008 CCN order, it included a cap on what the commission termed capital costs. That was the first time that the commission had placed a cost cap like this in a CCN order, looking at future costs. Several years later, SWEPCO filed this rate case to seek recovery of the costs of that Turk plant. And so it was in this rate case order at issue here that the commission needed to look back at that prior cost cap in its prior CCN order. Now, appellants would have this court believe that any time that term capital cost is used, that it's intended to include AFUDC, but that is just not always true. As is often true in rate cases, these terms have complex meanings, and neither the term capital costs nor AFUDC are defined by statute or by commission rules. That term capital costs is sort of a global concept, and it can include many different things. But the relevant question here is not actually the general treatment of AFUDC, but what the treatment of AFUDC under this cost cap was meant to be. The parties all cited to commission dockets that show you can't assume one way whether the cost cap was meant to include AFUDC. In those dockets, they showed that in some cases the commission lists it as a separate component.
But is it an ambiguous term?
The commission did determine that it was an ambiguous term, Your Honor. And really, one of the first they were, really what they are looking at was ambiguous is that term, cost cap. What was intended to be included in that cap? And so it was the commission looked to that CCN order as a whole to ascertain the intent of the commission at the time they sent that they set that cap. And
so the any cost language didn't help clarify the ambiguity for them?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The any cost language in the cap didn't help clarify it?
Well, I mean, we can look at the CCN order as a whole, and that did offer some clarification of what was intended to be in that cap. You can look at the CCN order on page 7, where they talk about the risks and uncertainties that were included in building that Turk plant. The commission explained that the purpose of the cap was to limit financial risks to ratepayers due to increased material and labor costs, proposes in changed ownership of the plant, or additional construction costs. You can look at finding of fact 22, where the commission explained that the capital cost of the Turk plant was estimated to be $1.522 billion. And a review of the administrative record shows that that number was based on SWEPCO's construction cost estimate. You can look at finding of fact 39 that states the cost of the Turk plant, including associated transmission and AFUDC, would constitute an increase to SWEPCO's total assets and rate base. And that word associated demonstrates that both AFUDC and transmission costs are there separate from capital cost. But what's also helpful that the commission could look to was the Court of Appeals, the Amarillo Court of Appeals opinion, in which they considered SWEPCO's challenge to the ability to even set a cap in a CCN proceeding. And so they looked at this exact cap. And the way the Amarillo Court of Appeals described the cap itself, they said, SWEPCO argued that there were two issues that were beyond the PUC's authority. One, construction costs in excess of $1.522 billion could not be considered for inclusion in rate case, and two, those carbon mitigation costs. So even the Amarillo Court of Appeals, in reviewing the administrative record in the original CCN case, termed those costs construction costs. But it wasn't clear to the commission, because that term, the capital cost cap, was ambiguous to them, whether or not that the original commission 6 years prior had intended to include AFUDC or to exclude AFUDC. And so they also reopened the record to admit additional evidence. And all the parties were permitted to admit evidence and briefing to address that issue of whether AFUDC was included in the cap. The commission reviewed that evidence and determined that the CCN order cost cap did not include AFUDC and was not meant to exclude the recovery of AFUDC. The commission's interpretation on that issue is reasonable. The agency is entitled to deference on its interpretation of its own order. If the court doesn't have questions, I'll move on to the prudence issue.
Well, one more question on that. Procedurally, why wouldn't it have been incumbent on SWEPCO, when the original 2008 order was issued, to challenge any ambiguity or uncertainty it saw in that order as far as what was going to be included in capital costs? I mean, aren't we procedurally letting SWEPCO have another bite at the apple later on?
No, Your Honor, and the reason that's not correct is, first of all, that cap was set in the context of a CCN proceeding. The second case that we're looking at, the ordered issue here, is the rate case, where those costs get a really thorough vetting. And it wasn't until the commission issued its order in that rate case that it became obvious that the commission was originally going to exclude AFUDC under that cap. And it was at that time that SWEPCO filed its motions for rehearing, and the commission relooked at that issue and said, okay, then this is ambiguous and we need to admit additional evidence, look at the whole context of the order. So to briefly turn to that second issue of prudence on the Turk plant, appellants are simply asking this court to reweigh the evidence that was before the commission and asking this court to substitute its judgment for the agency's things that are within the agency's discretion, and that is just simply improper. The question for this court is whether the commission's decision was reasonable and based on substantial evidence. And you asked what the prudent standard was, and it's set out in a series of cases. It's Gulf States, AEP, Nucor Steel, and most recently this court considered that prudent standard in the Encore rate case in 2014. So the idea is that it's either the utility's decision-making was prudent, or that decision comes within a select range of options that would have resulted if prudent decision-making had occurred. So in cases such as this, where there's no evidence of contemporaneous investigation and analysis when that decision was made, the prudence of the decision has to be considered after the fact. And that part is in Gulf States. Appellants argue that SWEPCO was required to conduct its after-the-fact review in some sort of certain manner, or that they have to conduct some sort of specific study. That's not the test. Gulf States does reference this rigorous review. The commission did a rigorous review and looking at the evidence that SWEPCO had presented before it. But also the company presented substantial evidence to show its decision-making after the fact.
What does an independent retrospective analysis mean?
And Your Honor, we don't really know the answer to that. The commission, I think, looked at it like it could provide that independent analysis. But the reason we don't know the answer to that is because no case since Gulf States has used that language or considered that under the prudence review. And it really hasn't been interpreted. The commission interpreted that as we're going to look at the evidence that SWEPCO has presented, and we're going to weigh that evidence. And they determined that there was substantial evidence in the record to support the decision to continue building the prudence plant. And
but the burden's on the commission to do an independent retrospective review. The burden's actually on the party seeking to prove prudence.
The burden is on the utility, Your Honor. And the question, if your question is, did they have evidence, they certainly did. What the commission's job is here, as this court knows, is to weigh that evidence that's before it. And it did that.
What did they have beyond SWEPCO's own employees testifying? I mean, who testified independent of SWEPCO about the retrospective analysis?
I'll defer to Ms. McCormick on all the evidence, but as I understand it, Your Honor, the evidence that supported the building of the Turk plant were SWEPCO employees, but what that phrase, independent analysis, doesn't necessarily, at least the commission did not construe that phrase to require an outside party to be hired. I mean, there's just no test like that. There's no sort of specific way that analysis has to be conducted, despite what the appellants are arguing. So a reviewing court should give significant deference to an agency in its field of expertise, and the court should not substitute its judgment on matters that are within the agency's discretion. Substantial evidence supports the commission's decision on this, Your Honor. I think reasonable minds could have reached the decision the agency reached. And if the court has no further questions.
I'll hold it for Ms. McCormick.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Billings-Ray. Morning, Ms. McCormick.
Good morning. For the record, I'm here on behalf of SWEPCO. And I think I'll start with a word on the decisional prudence issue. As Ms. Billings-Ray observed, the standard for decisional prudence is well established in cases and multiple Texas cases and PUC dockets. The standard is whether a prudent manager would have selected this or whether this decision was among the range of options that were available to a reasonable utility manager. Second guess the judgment of the utility, and it's not reviewed with the benefit of hindsight, and the PUC doesn't presume that there's only one prudent decision. That's the prudent standard. The prudent standard is not the language that appellants are focusing on in the Gulf States opinion. In Gulf States, the PUC had taken the prudent standard, applied it, and determined that the utility in that case had acted imprudently. And so what was before the court in the Gulf States case was whether the PUC's decision was reasonable. And the language that everybody's looking at here was just the court's observation or decision that was a reasonable way for the agency to review the evidence in that case. But that independent retrospective analysis language is not the gold standard that the PUC has to apply in every single decisional prudence analysis.
Except PUC actually incorporated that into their order.
The PUC did observe that that the court had said that in Gulf States, but the PUC determined, I think it's page 7 of its order, that you could meet that standard or meet the prudence standard with evidence of circumstances during construction. The PUC did not require a formal third-party study or expert testimony. That's the question of what kind of evidence do you have to bring forward to show prudence. That's something that's peculiarly within the judgment of the agency. The agency gets to decide what kind of evidence and the weight of the evidence.
If you don't require some sort of independent analysis from the in the after the fact review of prudence, then how is it a more rigorous standard than looking at a contemporaneous prudence review?
Well, the commission has to, that's something that the commission decides what's rigorous enough, and the commission gave a hard look at what all of the witnesses said in this case, and the commission detailed it did determine that some of the things that the utility did were not perfect and kind of said as much in its order. It was, and the commission acknowledged this was a difficult case, but the commission came down on the evidence way after weighing it all and decided that there was enough here to show that what the utility did was prudent. And I submit that's what we have the PUC for. And the APA says that the agency gets to make that decision. And all we do here is review whether there's a reasonable basis in the evidence for that decision. And we've detailed that in our briefs, and I won't belabor all of that here.
Just as a policy matter, because you do these cases a whole lot more than we do in your practice, if a utility can come in after the fact and not do the contemporaneous prudence review, why wouldn't utility always do that if the standard's the same? If basically you could be somewhere along the spectrum of prudence and that's enough, why wouldn't the utility almost, or why wouldn't they always come in with the after the fact analysis? Do you understand what I mean?
Well, I understand. Easier? I think I understand your question, but I don't think any utility wants to bring a difficult case to the PUC. And so, you know, the PUC characterized this decision as difficult, and I think that's enough to incentivize all utilities to try not to rely completely on a retrospective analysis. And
if you had an independent retrospective review, I mean, what would that look like? Would it essentially be the same analysis that the PUC is in the position of doing, of weighing the evidence and listening to testimony and evaluating the circumstance? Or what is there special that an independent review could have brought?
I'm not sure. I think appellants argue that you have to have somebody come in who's not related to the entity to try to dream up alternatives. I really don't know. You know, SWEPCO here brought evidence of exactly what did happen and wasn't dealing with hypotheticals, was dealing with real world facts, brought those to the commission. And I think those are more helpful to the commission, frankly, than what an unrelated third party consultant might have to say about who wasn't involved in the process. I'll switch to the cost cap issue. As you observed, Justice Rose, there are many agency decisions out there that use the term cost cap. And we've all cited the same decisions. All of us look at them as they supporting our case. What they show you for sure is that you never know whether the term capital cost includes AFUDC or not. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And so you have to construe that term in the context of the order where it appears. That's black letter law when you construe any instrument, whether it's a contract or a statute or an agency order. You look to the order as a whole. And I want to, TIEC has brought you this bench exhibit, and in their brief, they focus on a few snippets from the CCN order. But I want to refer you to the whole order. It's attachment C to the PUC's brief. And I would like to draw your attention to a few, some of the language in that order that TIEC has not reproduced in its documents. Reading the order as a whole, it's clear that what the PUC was doing was holding the company to its $1.5 billion cost estimate. The PUC observed several times that that was the cost of the plant and observed that the cost of constructing the plant had actually increased by some $200 million while the CCN case was pending. So on pages 6 and 7 of the CCN order, The PUC made clear it was concerned about the uncertainties in the evidence about whether that number would increase further. And they characterized that those costs as the cost of building and operating the plant, and noted that not all of the costs included in the $1.5 billion estimate were locked in by contract at that time. So that's what the PUC was concerned with when it set the cap. That's on page 7.
The AFUDC, that could not have been brought in the earlier proceeding, or should it have been?
Do you mean, could SWEPCO have raised that in?
Should they have complained about that at the earlier proceeding?
Absolutely not. Your Honor, nobody in the CCN case pretended that the $1.5 billion figure included AFUDC. All the witnesses to testify on that issue acknowledged that those two number construction costs were calculated and quantified separately from AFUDC costs. So there was no reason for SWEPCO to imagine that years later somebody would dream up the idea that the cap was intended to include AFUDC.
Then the res judicata argument of the dissent, what do we do with that? Nothing? That seems to be their point, is that this was something that should have been either included or not, or anticipated or not, in the original proceeding, correct?
Well, Your Honor, I think it was addressed in the original, in the CCN case. The res judicata argument and their motion for rehearing argument, frankly, assume the correctness of their original argument,
sure,
which is
sure,
that AFUDC was included in the cap.
Sure.
And it wasn't. And so all the cap said was, we're capping the $1.522 billion cost estimate, and you have to look back to, well, let me just say this, that they don't dispute that the $1.522 billion figure represented just construction costs and not AFUDC. And they argue only that the use of the generic term capital costs nevertheless means that the cap includes AFUDC.
Right.
But if you look at finding of fact 22 in the CCN order, it says, and I quote, the capital cost of the Turk plant is estimated to be $1.522 billion. The term capital cost can't mean one thing for finding of fact 22 and mean something else in ordering paragraph 2. And that's what they're asking you to, they're actually ignoring finding of fact 22. Their argument also, I see that my time is up.
You can go ahead and briefly wrap up.
Just want to point out that they're asking you to believe that the PUC knew that AFUDC wasn't included in that number, but nevertheless set the cap at that number. And so what that means is, they're suggesting that the PUC set SWEPCO up to never be able to recover any AFUDC. But if you look at finding of fact 39, that belies that argument. Finding of fact 39 shows that the commission contemplated that AFUDC would be included in rates. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Rebuttal, Mr. Hallmark.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the cost cap issue, you're exactly right, Justice Goodwin. They should have raised a motion for rehearing that the cap was set on all capital cost when their understanding was that it would be on only the construction cost at $1.522 billion.
So you don't agree that the two findings of fact can conflict?
I don't. The only way you get there is by considering this extrinsic evidence. Those findings of facts don't tell you that the capital cost cap is going to, in fact, be exceeded by AFUDC cost. That's only by looking at this outside evidence that you can get there. In fact, the order is also clear. It says, I think it's on page 9 of the order, that the commission is not, at this time, approving any cost recovery for the plant. So the finding of fact 39 is just reciting an estimate that SWEPCO had provided in the case. It doesn't overrule the clear language of the cost cap itself, which is in an ordering paragraph. It doesn't overrule the discussion that, you know, SWEPCO says that we were just pulling parts out of the order, but those are from the part of the order where the commission says, here's what the cap does. And recall that one of the things that it does is limit the amount of cost that can go into rate base. And that right there is what the commission did in 2014. They put more than that amount in rate base. And the cost cap, we should also just recall, was brought up at the very end of the hearing by a commissioner who was looking for a way to deal with the fact that you've got TIEC and some others over here saying, don't you grant this CCN. And you've got SWEPCO over here saying, grant it, this is the right thing to do. So the commission comes up with this cost cap, and it by its plain language, it applies to all capital costs. So the idea that the cost capital cost means one thing in the order and a different thing in a finding of fact, again, is based on the extrinsic evidence. What actually happened is the commission interpretation in 2014 is what requires capital cost to mean two different things, because the commission treated AFUDC as a capital cost for purposes of including it in SWEPCO's rate base, but then treated it as not a capital cost for purposes of this cap on capital cost. And that's what Commissioner Anderson's dissent referred to as an extraordinary and erroneous rendering of that 2008 order. We've heard references to these prior decisions that talk about capital costs and AFUDC. What those decisions show unequivocally, I agree with Ms. McCormick's points, we've all had our arguments about what those decisions show, but what they do show is that when the commission wants to talk about AFUDC separately from capital cost, either including it or excluding it, it says so. But there's nothing here where the commission references there being AFUDC costs separate from the capital cost.
And doesn't all of this raise the question of ambiguity?
Not within the four corners of the document. There is nothing in the document to show that the commission intended the cap to be on anything other than capital cost, which includes AFUDC by the commission's own reckoning. The commission in 2014 again determined that AFUDC costs are a type of capital cost. So I don't agree that the commission found that capital costs, that term, was ambiguous. The commission found that AFUDC are a type of capital cost, but then based on this extrinsic evidence, changed its mind from its original decision, which was that the cap included capital cost. After considering the extrinsic evidence only, it changed its mind and decided there was ambiguity in the order. One other thing I'd like to note is, just to make sure that it's understood, is that the cost cap, when you're granted a CCN, you're not ordered to build that plant. The SWEPCO could have decided to file a motion for a hearing to clarify what the cost cap was about. SWEPCO also could have decided, well, this is not what we asked for. We didn't ask for a cap of $1.522 billion. We are going to decide not to go forward. So I think that's important to understand when evaluating the commission's decision. Real quickly on the Turk prudence standard, to address your questions, Justice Field, the Gulf States case says, so what is an independent retrospective analysis? What the case says, and this is from the commission decision, is that it's an analysis of decisions independent of the process that was actually employed to reach the decisions at the time. So probably the gold star method would be to get some third party who comes in and evaluates that. But at the very least, you have to provide some analysis that is different than you just saying, here's what we did at the time. That's not retrospective. That's not independent of what you did at the time. That's just taking the evidence you offered as contemporaneous proof, which in this case the commission rejected, and trying to offer it instead as a retrospective analysis. And I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Hallmark. Thank you all for a good argument on an interesting case. You know, we love PUC rate setting cases. You managed to get through it without bewildering the court too badly, I think. The case will be submitted and the court will stand in recess.